ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
One of the most remarkable pictures of economic development anywhere in the state of Wisconsin can be found right here in the heart of downtown Milwaukee. With the new Milwaukee Bucks Arena taking shape, the Northwestern Mutual Office Building nearing completion, and the sparkling Couture Office and Residential Tower about to break ground, well over $1 billion in real estate projects are underway. And this is just the beginning of what some are calling the Renaissance of Milwaukee. Where do all the ideas for these projects start? Where do they come from? On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to visit with a UWM professor who's teaching students at the university how to create that vision for what Milwaukee may or could look like in coming years. Carolyn Eswine is a professor at UWM's School of Architecture and Urban Planning, and she's leading the Urban Design Studios and the Community Design Solutions Center on campus. Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Amazing things happening right before our eyes, downtown Milwaukee. You've been with the school for a while. Did you ever imagine there would be so much going on at one time in terms of new buildings popping up?
No, I would say we're surprised by all the cranes. I think that's the mayor's favorite comment right now. His favorite bird is the crane. We looked at this a few years ago waiting because other cities like colleague cities were experiencing that renaissance. And then slowly we came out of the recession, and a lot of the visioning has really started to happen. I think what you need to be patient. I always tell my students as an urban planner, you need to be really patient because it may take a decade to see all of your vision being implemented. And that's where Milwaukee is right now. This has been planned for a while. It's exciting to see a lot of it being developed.
And let's talk about the role that UWM, you and your students have played over the years in terms of painting that picture of what might happen when the money came along and shovels could actually go into the ground.
Right. We have a lot of different courses. A lot of my teaching is practice-based, and so we bring in real clients, and I think that's the benefit both to the city but also to the students. So my urban design studio a couple years ago was called Leveraging the Arena Investment. The city planning group had asked me to take a look at what could develop around the arena based on all of that investment. And so we had a lot of different designs. So, you know, when you have 15 different students, you have 15 different visions. But my premise and requirement was it had to be active 24/7. So that could be housing, could be offices, but really public spaces are a destination and changes the character of a downtown. And then more recently this year, we looked at Michigan and Clybourne streets. There's a lot of investment going on around. So Wisconsin Avenue, the Grand Ave is being looked at. You have the Couture, you have the Lakefront Gateway Park, but Michigan and Clybourne have really been forgotten. It's all about cars. And so when we walked those streets, the students were a little overwhelmed by all the parking structures and vacant lots. And so it starts at that conversation, what will the market support? So that's the realistic, the reality base, along with the vision. And it's been really fun to come up with drawings that start that conversation.
And do those drawings ultimately turn into blueprints?
And some do. So in the mid-90s, late 90s, Park East visioning started at the university at Serap.
The old Park East Freeway, for those who might be new to Milwaukee, there actually was a lot more concrete spanning where the Bucks Arena is arising.
Initially, we looked at the Highway 794 between downtown and Third Ward. We thought that was the best one to come down, but there wasn't political will and support for that. And so then we looked at, let's look at Park East and what could be developed there if you brought the street down to a boulevard. And it takes a lot of visioning, but it started that conversation, which allowed political leaders, Wisconsin Department of Transportation, all of those groups to look at the development. It's no different than looking at the streetcar right now. You have groups and a consultant group now looking at all the development potential around that route. And so that's really exciting that CEREP, and a lot of different examples, has really influenced decisions and projects in Milwaukee.
There are a lot of architects, a lot of planners who do that sort of work for a living, who've long been out of school. Some listeners may say, well, shouldn't you just leave it to the professionals, leave it to the people who do that sort of work? What special quality comes from the work out of the mind of a student, someone who may not have been out there for 10 or 20 or 30 years?
They are definitely visionary. They get a little frustrated when I have them think about parking requirements and where's the loading dock. So they really push the envelope in terms of the visionary aspect. I bring in different clients to review and give them feedback. So they're not hearing just from myself, but they're hearing from city planners, local architects, local developers. And it's interesting to watch that dialogue as well. So we're helping them become, you know, the future leaders and professionals that once they graduate, they're working on these real projects. And in terms of our design center, I always tell, you know, the architects could just follow us along in a lot of the projects because we're helping a community group fundraise, for example. So, you know, our clients for community design solutions are more underserved. So they're nonprofit groups, civic churches in the central city where they need some initial help developing that concept. And they'll use those drawings to raise money and then ultimately hire an architect, a local architect usually.
And it's not limited just to the city of Milwaukee. The sort of design solution work that you bring to communities.
Correct. We've done work in Racine. We've looked at the Riverwalk in that area, the Uptown neighborhood. They asked us to take a look at how do you redevelop a couple of our vacant buildings. We're having difficulty showing investors what's possible. And so our drawings have shown, you know, how could you reuse this as an antique mall, for example? How could you reuse this for new apartments? And so their, you know, city is using some of those drawings as well. Primarily the work is in the Milwaukee area, but Port Washington's another community that we've worked in.
Is there something special about a young person who is approaching these projects with the benefit of living in a cultural environment that may be different from that 40 or 50 year old, thinking of other music mm-hmm. that they listen to, the way in which they see themselves and other millennials relating to each other and a space in the city? Do they have different tastes than someone who may have been living here for 40 or 50 years?
They have a different taste, but it's also a different outlook in terms of a smaller unit, a housing unit is acceptable. If I'm close to entertainment and social gathering places and I can get on the bike trail. And, you know, I always laugh because most of our renderings now, I don't need to tell the students anymore to include bicyclists. That's a given. This generation bikes a lot more than you saw probably 15 years ago. And I would say it's the social aspect. The millennials are looking more at the social gathering. You know, that's the impact we're seeing on retail, right? You know, you don't just go to the mall to shop. You really go there to have an experience. And it's changing the way developers are looking at projects. I think every project you see right now in Milwaukee probably has a plaza or a community gaming room in the development. So it's changing the way people are designing based on the new users of the building. And quite frankly, all the users, you know, there's no difference now between what a senior is looking for in their housing complex than a millennial. But we're learning. I learn from them every day. I think that's another exciting aspect of my job is learning from them something new that they're bringing when they do a lot of their research.
Well, we talked a bit about the residential work that that your students do and the desire by communities to have spaces that will attract people to not just work but live in an urban environment. But what about those office buildings? You know, what approach do you encourage your students to take when thinking about building those working environments that the folks who are living in those residences will go to during the day?
Yeah, office is changing. We talk a lot about maker spaces and the community aspect of offices. And I think if you look at some of the recent media coverage of, you know, the best places to work, they have outdoor patios. They have kitchenettes where people actually cook together. They have game rooms where you can play pool, or you actually, I was just at an office where they actually have the headsets on, they're taking a break, and they're competing with one another. And so in our research through some of our community charrettes, we look a lot at the makerspace aspect, which is one, where you can work and sell. So I make something in the back of the facility and I sell it out front. So it's a multi-use building and I might live upstairs. From an office perspective, we're looking at the shared spaces. So most of the, I think, sort of the, this generation is not looking to be in a cubicle. They want to have that dialogue and the constant interaction with those that they're working with. So it's changing the design of offices, but also how it, you know, what is the perspective? And I'm hearing, you know, especially local firms, you need to have those spaces to compete now to attract employees.
Is there anything that you have to tell your students to consider when you think about the climate here in Milwaukee versus, say, Tampa or Phoenix? Does design somehow have to adapt to the fact that we have snow, or can we have spaces that look real California-ish here in Wisconsin?
Well, you think of the microclimate of a public space. That's one of the things I talk about when I'm talking about the design of a public space. How big is it? How is it defined? And how do you use it year-round? And so you need places to, you know, people love, you know, people watching is popular, but is there a programmed element? Do you have an event there? Or is it more for casual relaxing during lunch? And you need a place to be in the shade, and then you need a place to be in the sun. And then if you see the designs right now for the Gateway Park at our lakefront, they have an opportunity for a skating rink, but they have an opportunity to be out with the food trucks. And so there's different ways that you can interact. So yeah, you design for the climate. So I always ask them, what will the space feel like in winter? What will it look like? And lighting is another large one of those components. We spend some time talking about what does it look like during the day? What does it look like at night? How safe does it feel? And that's another aspect of, you know, 24/7, but year-round use.
You've used the term charrette a couple of times. Some of our listeners may not be familiar with that. What is it, and how does it become a part of how you teach students?
A charrette, it's a French word, first of all, but it really is an intensive interactive workshop. So think of it as a day-long workshop where you are developing ideas with your colleagues and other experts. And at the end of the day, we have solutions based on feedback from a variety of stakeholders. So we've been conducting several of those. I'm in the middle of my ninth one right now with Community Design Solutions. And we do a series of focus groups prior to the actual day-long charrette, where I talk to local developers, local neighbors, local business owners. We have been assigned six sites by that point on a commercial mixed-use corridor in Milwaukee. That's been our focus area. And I always say if it was easy to redevelop these vacant buildings and sites, they wouldn't need to come to us. So I need to take a step back, look what's been planned in the past, but get feedback. What will the market support? What do the neighbors want to see there? What do the business owners think would complement their business and bring more people? And we'd bring those ideas together, and we, again, for a full day of intense ideas and sketching, we bring in six local architects, and we, at the School of Architecture and Planning, have a really active day of coming up with ideas, and in that day, they report out. So that's the other fun part. They report out, here are ideas, and it's
that's
like
really
having
compressed, I mean, to do all of this in a very brief period of time.
It's like having 10 meetings, I say, in one day. So, you know, you have city officials, elected officials, you have neighbors, residents, property owners there, and developers all having that conversation together.
Give us an example of a charrette that has involved a place that some of us might be familiar with or have driven by.
Well, Brownsville was a popular area. That's North Avenue just east of I-43 and intersects with MLK. We had the Garfield School that has been vacant there for many, many years. Ideas had been suggested but hadn't moved forward. And that came out of our charrette as a mixed-use building where you could have a community aspect on the ground floor, so active ground floor use, and then housing above. And that's moving forward. So it's quite exciting. And then the Milwaukee Enterprise Center is another project that is now being named after a former colleague of ours, Walford Sanders. So he had worked in that neighborhood for a long time. Again, that's near Locust and MLK Drive. And that is being redeveloped into offices. on one half and housing on the other half. Again, that came out of our discussion about what makes sense for that, for reusing that building, what makes sense for the neighborhood. And then the city has utilized that in their discussions with potential investors.
You tell me recently you brought your students downtown, which is not unusual because you do a lot of work in the urban mm-hmm. area, but you actually took them to a street festival for a project you're working on. Tell us about that one.
Yes, many of us have been to Bastille Days, and it's very popular. I remember going there when I was in graduate school. Well, the streetcar route is going to go right through the middle of where we currently use for Bastille Days. So we've been asked to take a look at how might we redevelop that area, and we're going to have to move vendors and move some of the performance areas. The streetcar is going to come through, so we think that's an amenity. Let's take advantage of that, but it's going to go right through the middle where everybody's standing in line to buy their beer or their drink. So we are coming up with a vision and working with Easttown to look at how we might reconfigure that area.
Any drive-through crepe places that might might come around Bastille Days?
Well, we said we want people to come in. They're already discussing how might they engage the streetcar, because there's going to be a stop right on Kilbourne, right next to Cathedral Square. And the big discussion right now is the Eiffel Tower. It's been right in the middle of where the new streetcar stop is going to be. So, you know, where do we put that? And this is the major generator. It's the revenue generator for Easttown. So it's really important for them, but it's also really important for the downtown. So how can we have those two work together?
Put it on stilts. Just lift
drive
it up.
Under, yeah, go bigger, right underneath.
You need bigger legs on, yes. on Milwaukee's Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, so we're going to work with Public Works next. We're meeting with them in a couple weeks to understand their sort of their ideas and concerns. There's a lot of constraints when you actually walk around. I walked around this year looking at it very differently than I have in the past, where cars are coming in and out of buildings, where people are standing in line. So, you know, if you've driven around town, you've seen the streetcar going in, it's going to have an impact. And some of those, you know, people have to work around down. And it's you have to think differently. We've challenged our client a little bit about, it's working really well now. It needs to work really well in the future, but we have to be open to different ways of thinking about where the vendors go. How do we cycle through? We're going to give them a couple of different options for how people will move through the different vending areas.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and this week, joining us in the studio, Carolyn Eswine. Carolyn is a professor of architecture and urban planning at UWM and is teaching urban design and also runs a community design solution center that helps communities throughout southeastern Wisconsin have a better idea of what they can do with spaces that that maybe have fallen off the radar screen, maybe not what they once were or what the community wants those spaces to be in terms of older buildings, vacant lots. And she uses UWM students to help create this vision. Carolyn, as you talk to city officials, people, big city like Milwaukee, how do they view students being part of this process? Do they take them seriously? Do they look at your students and see them as kids, or do they see them as people who are bringing in ideas that are really worthy of serious consideration?
I think it's a mixed reaction. I think some people are really excited about the new ideas, and others sometimes feel like, well, that's a great idea, but I'm not sure that the market will support it. And so it's my challenge to help the students understand and balance that with the market. From a CDS perspective, I would say all of our clients usually are very welcoming. They're so appreciative that the students are coming in and working with their neighborhood and listening to them. So one of the first things we do on most of our projects is we engage with the neighborhood, and they really appreciate that we truly are listening. And that's also a message to my staff, again, who are students, is we have to listen to the desires and then balance that with what's possible and explain, you know, our solutions, how it has responded to what the public has asked for.
Do they pay the students or UWM for any of this work?
For community design solutions, there's a minimal fee to cover some of the costs, but another portion is covered by UWM. For the studio work that we do, there's no fee at all. So we develop the design concepts and sometimes a booklet. I'm really fortunate my dean is able to raise funds sometimes to support the work that we're doing and provide a booklet or provide a venue for us to exhibit our work.
So if I'm living in a community here in southeastern Wisconsin and I've trying to figure out how to go ahead and fix my downtown or deal with a neighborhood issue, they can contact you and see whether they might be a candidate for the support and work of you and your students.
Right. For the studio, we look at very large-scale projects. So we look at many, many blocks. There's other professors that look at individual buildings. You know, Matt Jaros has looked at the redevelopment of the post office building. So, you know, that's a singular building, although a very large project. For myself, it's usually a much larger scale. For community design solutions, our clients need to be in the nonprofit sector or a city. We don't work with private developers. There's local architects that can work with them. If there's a really broad public benefit, then sometimes we'll work with local architects or local developers.
We have a lot of great communities, a lot of great buildings that are right here in southeastern Wisconsin, but the rest of the country has some wonderful architecture and has used spaces in really creative ways. Do you and your colleagues on the faculty at the School of Architecture and Urban Planning look to other areas around the country as perhaps inspirations for what Milwaukee could look like down the road in 10 or 20 years?
Yeah, that's one of our common themes for all of our projects is doing precedent reviews. So that means we go look at other projects in other cities that are comparable in size or comparable to the context of the project we're looking at. And we look at not just the design, but how might they have phased it? Who are the partnerships to actually make that project evolve? And then, you know, recently, obviously when I travel, I have a camera with me almost all the time. So I was recently finally at the High Line in New York. I'd seen this presented by my students many times in different projects, and it was really fun to actually walk the High Line and experience it myself. Because the other thing I say to the students is make sure you experience the space, because it's often very different when you're in the space than you're looking at it on Pinterest or online and you've Googled it. So I think a lot of our students are able to travel and see those spaces and bring it back.
Any favorite cities that you would think might be a great model for what Milwaukee hasn't done yet?
Oh, that's a tough question. Right now I'm involved also in the harbor. So I'm on the Harbor District Board, and we're looking at how might we redevelop the inner harbor
Hundreds of acres. You used to have Solvay Coke and a lot of the big old line industrial companies that made a lot of smoke and created a lot of jobs, but those jobs are gone, and now you've got a lot of empty open space along the river
and
the lake.
I think one of the challenges we weren't expecting is we thought there'd be a lot more industrial uses that needed to be on the water. And there really weren't that many that we really would want to have in that area of our city, such as, you know, like paper mills. We weren't looking for that. So now we've taken a look at, well, what type of mixed uses, while still emphasizing jobs, what makes sense? I was in Toronto last summer, and that has evolved so much since I had been there previously. Their waterfront is a combination of public space, active uses for water areas, and jobs. They have a lot more housing than we're looking at right now, but that was an example, very intense example. Cleveland is more similar to Milwaukee, and so they've embraced and have more cultural connections along their waterfront. So it's always good, like you said, to go actually see the place and say, well, how might that fit with Milwaukee? I think we're very unique. We want to take advantage of that. And our attitude is we want to be the model that everybody comes and says, wow, look what Milwaukee did. That was my challenge to the students with the Arena District. I said, you know, when you Google great downtown entertainment districts, Milwaukee definitely does not show up now, but we have the opportunity to show up in the future.
You mentioned the Riverwalk. That's a project that a lot of UWM people have worked on over the years, in terms of what that could look like. And isn't there discussion now of extending the Riverwalk much farther south?
Yes, it's almost complete right now for the original plans all the way through downtown through the Third Ward, and that has generated a lot of investment. So the money that the city has put in has really offered an opportunity to expand the investment that's come into the city much, much more than what the city initially invested. We are looking at bringing that down through the Harbor District as well. Right now, nobody down there can really touch the water. You know, in front of the Freshwater Sciences building of UWM, you can drive around a cul-de-sac there and view the water, and it's spectacular. The ships are coming in, they're taking a load of soybeans out to Russia, and they have tugboats. So it's really exciting. But most of the general public can't see that. So one of our first projects is we're calling it Slosh Park. It's an opportunity right next to Freshwater Sciences Building to have a public space where the public can actually come, see the water, experience it, and be educated at the same time. We're going to talk about the fish that are currently in the lake and how we want to change that. So the Riverwalk, our plan is that all aspects of the river, at least on the Inner Harbor section, will be public. It'll be a different character as you move through the different areas of Solvay Cove, for example, all the way down to Beecher. But everybody will have that opportunity. Whether you live there or work there, you still will have the access.
And it's amazing. So many of us don't go down and take a look at the traffic and the activity in that harbor area. It's a lot better than TV in terms of entertainment, isn't it? I mean, my goodness. Yeah. You talk about the size of those ships and all the activity. It's hard to believe that it's right next to us in this great big urban environment.
It's right there. So the northern part of the harbor will be more housing and mixed-use development, more intense development. But we have to balance, you know, there's asphalt tanks there. How do you balance that with housing next to it? You're obviously right across from Jones Island. There's a, you know, it's an intriguing space, but it also has an odor at times. So, you know, you have to buy into, I want to be part of this experience. And as I mentioned, jobs will be a large focus on the larger sites that we have to work with. You know, how do we bring additional jobs that serve the neighborhood and the region as well?
Just a couple of minutes left as we wrap up today's program. Where do you see UWM and its urban design program going in future years? Do you see us continuing to be this source of ideas, or will we ever run out of places that we need to design and maybe be looking at other cities outside of Milwaukee?
You know, each year when I select a site, I think, well, I've already done that, or somebody's already looked at that. But there's always an opportunity locally. I think the bigger opportunity is how might I work with other departments on campus. So I'm combining architecture and urban planning, but how might I talk to the engineers or the Peck School of the Arts? I'm doing some joint work a little bit with Marquette in their real estate program. You know, how do we do have more collaborative efforts in the city? You know, we're all really interested in the future of Milwaukee, and how do we improve the future opportunities, make it more of a destination, and we become the model, the national model. So I think collaborations are something that I'd like to continue exploring.
And how neat that the university, the UWM, which is an urban research university, is so intimately tied to the future of this urban area.
Yes, I think having us at the table and being part of that conversation is really exciting, not only for myself that it gets to be part of that, but for the students. You know, the feedback I get from the students is they're always so excited to be part of these real projects. And they sit in a meeting, and you can imagine the real dialogues and the conversation that they're part of. It really just helps them when they go out and they're a professional in the city as well.
Thanks, Carolyn. Carolyn Eswine, director of UWM's Community Design Solutions Center, also a professor of urban design, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Mujak.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Mujak, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.